WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Forget the Bulls for a moment. Sorry, Zach LaVine. And the Sky. My bad, Angel Reese. Arguably, one of the most famous basketball teams to come out of our great city doesn't even have Chicago in its name. Maybe you recognize that music. I'm talking about the Harlem Globetrotters, of course. In 1926, businessman Abe Saperstein pulled together a group of basketball players and began playing in a style no one had really seen before. Decades later, the Globetrotters had traveled the world, become a household name, and transformed the game of basketball. The story is told in great detail in a new book out this month called Globetrotter: How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports. The author is writer and former Chicago Tribune Metro editor Mark Jacob, and he joined us to talk about the book, which he co-wrote with his brother Matthew. I wanted to know, how did they get interested in the topic, and when did they first learn that the Harlem Globetrotters weren't really from Harlem? Here's Mark.
Because I was looking for a biography. My brother lives in Arlington, Virginia. I live here in Evanston. Mm-hmm. And we're close, and we like to stay close by doing writing projects together.
Oh, nice.
So we were looking for a biography, and a friend of ours came up with, said, what about Abe Saperstein? And we knew that he had founded the Harlem Globetrotters, and that was about it. Just a one sentence, that's what we knew.
Mm-hmm.
And we started looking into it, and we were just gobsmacked by how much we didn't know about him and how impactful he was in the world of sports, in the world of culture and society and race relations and
yeah.
So many things. And it was just a joy to do the research. And we did a couple of years worth of research to figure it all out and wrote it up, and the book came out. And yes, the Harlem Globetrotters are not from Harlem, and they are not Globetrotters, or they certainly weren't when they started
right.
out. They Abe Saperstein came up with that name because he's a 5'3" Jewish guy from the North Side who worked in the Park District, met black athletes from the South Side
mm-hmm.
because, you know, through those connections, and became friends with them. And Sasha, it's really important to understand that this is in the 1920s. So this is just a few years after the race riot
right.
here in Chicago, the 1919 race riot. So it wasn't like a natural thing for some white guy or Jewish guy, whoever, to be making big pals with black people on the South Side.
Right.
But Abe cut through stuff like that. He was really a very amiable guy, and he loved sports. And so he's working in the Park District, and he meets these guys through basketball, and they want somebody to set up games where they can go barnstorming in surrounding states and in rural areas of Illinois and make a little money. And so they realize they need a non-black person to arrange all this
uh-huh.
just because of the trust issues and the communication issues. And Abe turns out to be good at it.
He's the guy.
Yeah, and so he gets to where he has his own team, the Harlem Globetrotters, and he called them Harlem. He said Harlem as a code word for black, you know, that I'm bringing black. Because originally, they weren't traveling the world. They were traveling small towns in the Midwest.
Right.
And he just wanted to signal to these small, predominantly white towns, hey, I'm bringing black athletes into your town. Don't be surprised.
Yeah. So you write beautifully about a key game for the Harlem Globetrotters that took place on February 19th, 1948. Tell us what happened that night at the Chicago Stadium and why it was such a turning point and standout moment for both the Globetrotters and Saperstein.
Yeah. I mean, people, modern people know the Harlem Globetrotters as this show team, you know, that really, it doesn't matter what the score is, it doesn't matter who wins, they're playing a bunch of tricks and they're doing trick passes, they're throwing the ball and they're making jokes, they're right. bedeviling the referee, they're doing, you know, they're just making people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they used to be a great team athletically, and segregation helped make them a great team because the best black athletes in the entire country were playing for the Harlem Globetrotters, or almost all of them, because you know they couldn't play with the white teams. There was segregation in basketball, not as severe as in baseball, but there certainly was. And so in 1948, Abe Saperstein's team, the Globetrotters, is playing in Chicago Stadium in a exhibition game against the Minneapolis Lakers, who are considered the best team in the world. You know, just nobody better. They had George Mikan, this famous DePaul athlete, you know, tall guy with glasses, mm-hmm. which made him unusual because he was wearing glasses, but he was a great athlete. The famous coach, Ray Meyer, who some people in Chicago will remember, had George Mikan take dance lessons so that he would improve his footwork. And so he became a great athlete. And that team dominated. And everyone thought that the Globetrotters were just this kind of show team, just this kind of a bunch of jokers. And so they play in Chicago Stadium. And it's a fantastic game, very close. And the Globetrotters win it on a last second shot.
Yeah.
And everyone just goes crazy. That, you know, Chicago Stadium's full and everyone's going nuts. And it's this great moment. And we lead the book with it.
Yeah, no, great story at the top, really ropes you in. And I want you to talk a bit more about that role that you've already sort of touched on, comedy played, right?
Right.
It was part of his, Saperstein's vision of basketball and the Globetrotters, because he had these talented top athletes on his teams from the start, but he seemed to have a genius for making sure that it was also cutting edge and entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, this worked against him in the end because people like didn't take him seriously sometimes. And when you ask the question of why is this the first biography of Abe Saperstein here 6 decades after his death, that's why. Because people the sports purists looked down on him. But what Abe Saperstein was trying to do was a number of things. He realized he tapped into this great vein of talent, all these black athletes who were not really well known, especially not in the white world. And so he was touring with them, and just they were amazing people with their talent and with their, and also their style, you know, their ability to, you know, the trick passes, the behind the back passes, the long, fast breaks.
Those are some skills.
No, but I mean, everyone needs to understand what basketball was like in that era. And it was very much pass, 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 pass. Very, very, everyone's got to touch the ball every time we go down. And it was, they had a jump ball. After every made basket in basketball until 1938, they had a jump ball at center court. So, you know, I mean, people who know basketball today would say, what?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it was. And it was it was not as creative and wild and unpredictable as it is today.
Right.
And the Globetrotters with Abe Saperstein helped make that true.
Now, as you said, Saperstein was this little, you know, 5'3" Jewish immigrant running this black basketball team during a time of racial segregation. So many of his players adored him and he was seen as sort of their advocate. But on the flip side, some say that he also sort of pushed harmful stereotypes by making his players act clownish on the court. And some likened it to minstrelsy, right? Talk about that dichotomy.
Yeah, it's a real tough thing because, you know, the question is, do you view him in today's standards or do you view him as a creature of his time? And Abe Saperstein, I think in the 40s and 50s would have been considered a social justice warrior, you know, advocating for black people. But by the 60s and 70s, that kind of clownish image for black people was considered offensive.
Right.
And it was, I mean, black people in the civil rights movement, they didn't want to be known as court clowns. They wanted to be known as doctors, lawyers, and college professors. I mean, and so the times changed more than Abe did. And he, you know, as a creature of his time, he, you know, in our book, we made sure in our book that we were not like glossing over things. We it's a warts and all biography of a person who's a complicated person, and you know, race in America is pretty darn complicated too. And so, we, you know, he said inappropriate things. He also promoted black people to positions of responsibility in his organization. His best friend was one of the black Globetrotter players, one of the early players, Inman Jackson. And he really, the thing about that 1948 game that you were asking about, Sasha, is many people cite that as the single thing that forced the NBA to integrate. That was the proof that black athletes could play with anyone. And so in a lot of ways, Abe Saperstein broke down barriers for black people too. But again, in the book, to be fair to history, we cite, you know, the inappropriate things he may have said. And, you know, also if you're an owner in sports, you're going to make some people happy and you're going to make some people unhappy.
And
we have that in the book too. Some of his former players just loved him and praised him, and some of his former players, you know, didn't.
So even in the 1940s, when the Globetrotters had that breakthrough game that we talked about, Mark, basketball wasn't the incredibly popular big business sport that it is today. So I want to dig more into that. Tell us more about how much of basketball's success in the U.S. and globally can be traced back to Saperstein. Like, how much credit does he deserve here?
I think he deserves a lot of credit, and much less than he got. And that's, you know, as my brother and I were writing this book, we almost became kind of advocates for him as far as being just an underappreciated guy. I mean, we haven't even gotten how he pioneered the three-point shot. Maybe we'll get to that later. But what I wanted to get at to your question is, the NBA was struggling in those years. You know, this idea that, you know, it's big showtime and they have a, you know, big weekend where they have the All-Star game and everyone loves them and everyone makes a bunch of money. The NBA was really struggling. I mean, the teams were like, were failing, and, you know, it was just, there was a real question of whether a pro league would survive. And what Abe Saperstein and the Globetrotters did is do double headers with these NBA teams, to where they'd have a Globetrotters game and then they'd have an NBA game.
Yeah.
And that was fine. That was sometimes the biggest take that the NBA teams got the whole season. But it was, the Globetrotters were so popular that people would show up to those games and they'd leave after the Globetrotters games. And so they would leave when the NBA teams were getting ready to play. The NBA hated that so much that they switched the games around to where the NBA team
of course
was
they
first.
Did. Yeah.
And so Abe Saperstein helped keep the NBA alive in the early years with this kind of money and with this kind of revenue generation. And so when it came around to Abe Saperstein trying to get his own team, the NBA stiffed him. The NBA said, no, you can't, you know, we're not going to. By that time, Sasha, it should be understood that the Globetrotters were really a show team, they weren't like competing. They had their own,
right.
Like they had the Washington Generals, who traveled with them, and their job was to be really good but lose. And so it wasn't a real game, it was a show. And I think that really made the NBA wary of letting Saperstein have a team in the NBA.
Yeah, like you said earlier, they found it hard to take him seriously.
Yeah. And so he wanted a team in Los Angeles. Instead, they let the Minneapolis Lakers move to Los Angeles. And if you wonder why they're called the Los Angeles Lakers in an area that is short on water, that's because they used to be the Minneapolis Lakers.
And so, where
there's a lot of water in Minnesota.
Right, right. Makes sense.
Yeah. So that's how that happened. But Abe was begging the NBA to go to the West Coast, and they just refused. It was very East Coast dominated. And then when they did go, they stiffed Abe and they gave it. They let the Lakers go there, and so Abe was very upset about that. He started his own basketball league, the American Basketball League, which lasted a season and a half in the early '60s. But the real important thing about the ABL is that was the first league that ever used the 3-point shot.
Yes, tell me more about that, because he's considered, Abe is, the pioneer of the 3-pointer.
Yeah, the thing about that, Sasha, is almost nobody knows who invented or pioneered the 3-point shot. And we hope our book will make a difference in that, because you know, I mean, Caitlin Clark owes a debt to Abe Saperstein, and so does Steph Curry, and so do all
a lot of players do.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't know it because he started it in a league that failed quickly, and then it didn't get picked up again until the ABA in 1967, and then the ABA failed, and then the NBA didn't do it, and then the NBA finally realized it was too boring and decided to pick it up. And so tracing that back to Abe Saperstein is difficult for some people. And so if you asked almost even sports experts that question, they may not know. But he's the primary reason that there is a 3-point shot in basketball today.
Super interesting.
Yeah, and he gets zero credit for it.
I hadn't heard of it till your book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about the Globetrotters, the team's surprising Chicago history, as well as Abe Saperstein's impact on basketball. But he had a massive impact on sports in other ways as well. And before I let you go, I mean, you write about how he played a role in the Negro League. So right. I want to hear a bit more of the story there.
Yeah, he was an owner of the Birmingham Black Barons in the Negro Leagues. But he also promoted a lot of barnstorming games. The Negro Leagues were struggling financially, too. And that's another thing to credit Saperstein for. He's part of the reason the Negro Leagues survived. Mm. Because they on league games, they made some money, but they needed to go out barnstorming and doing kind of non-league games in order to make enough money to survive. And Saperstein set those up in the Midwest. And that was really important. He was a big champion of Satchel Paige, one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Right.
In fact, when baseball first started integrating, Abe Saperstein is the one who talked Bill Veeck, another great Chicago sports guy who owned the Cleveland Indians. Abe Saperstein talked him into having Satchel Paige on his team. By that time, Satchel Paige was 42 years old.
Wow.
Everyone thought he was over the hill, and they thought that Veeck was doing some sort of gimmick to try to get him in.
But Abe got him a chance to play.
Got him a chance to play, and not only that, but Satchel went 6-1 that season, and the Cleveland Indians ended up with a regular season tied, had to do a playoff, won that, then won the World Series. So they never would have even got to the World Series without Saperstein championing Satchel Paige. And so Saperstein, in that way, also helped integrate baseball. He Minnie Minoso, who everyone loves in Chicago, mm-hmm. former great White Sox player, Abe Saperstein discovered him. The thing about it, Sasha, is the more you look at this Saperstein story, the more you realize that how many fingers he had in so many pies.
Which is why I'm so glad you wrote a book on this. Yeah. Fantastic. We've been talking with Mark Jacob. His new book, Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports, is available now. Thank you so much, Mark.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset catches up with culture makers, and if this sounds like what you're looking for, well, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.